Mini episode 1759 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1759. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you today. And something that has become a little bit of a tradition the last couple of years in the FDH Lounge is with the dignitary that we have on with us today, getting together after week one of the NFL season and just kind of breaking things down, seeing how things might look a little bit different than what we envisioned coming into the season. And so specifically, what that means is bringing in FDH Lounge dignitary Derek Allen. And again, we are, and this is something where we are dropping the kayfabe here as he is able to use the government name, as was not necessarily the case previously, but got to know him as the man behind the man of the great, great, great operation here with a great friend of the show, Maya Master. The trillion-dollar baby, as I refer to her, the emerging voice of health and wellness in the 2020s. You can go check out at her Twitter account, at Chaotic Goodest, and what you want to do is click on the link tree, and you will see all of the resources right there and all of the wisdom that is available to the general public from her right there on the link tree. And, of course, for Derek, he always has some football thoughts, football picks, various assorted what have you, the Twitter account at @dude_cav on there. And as I habitually joke about any time we talk about this, not the same Cavs that I am a huge fan of, the wine and gold, but a more vaunted Cav, as it were, here in service of the U.S. of A. But great always to have Derek on the show here and be able to break things down at this point in the season. And, of course, we've gotten together with him on other occasions, sometimes just me, sometimes with other members of our FDH football multiverse. But as is tradition, it's me and him breaking it down after NFL week one. So, Derek, welcome back to the show, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Always love the plugs. And I do think it's funny, and I appreciate that you still call it Twitter, because there are some there's some crazies out there that have gone to call it X, and I refuse. I don't care. They can put me in jail. I will always call it Twitter.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm not changing. I mean, that's where I'm just stubborn. I don't really care. You know, I don't there are people that might not want to, they might want to call it this or call it that because of their thoughts on the very weird guy that runs it. I don't really have a dog in that fight, but him changing it to X is a bridge too far for me. So what gets me is like the people that like say it, like formerly known as Twitter. Like, we know what you're talking about, you know? It's I don't know what you need to say formerly known as Twitter. Pick a lane, you know?
Yeah, it's not Prince.
Yeah, like, either call it X or call it Twitter, but, you know, we don't need people to infantilize us and tell us what it used to be. We know that. And, you know, speaking of infantilizing, you know, as we talked about off-air here, for all of the Browns fans who are not on the anti-Deshaun bandwagon with me in 2022, you know, as I said to you off-air, I really didn't expect to necessarily spend much time talking about this team, much less have it be at the top. But this Deshaun Watson thing is just mushrooming almost by the hour, you know, here as we are going going live to tape here midweek. And the latest with this now, the Leroy Bickerstaff, evidently the Twitter burner account and all the things that are being said there, throwing teammates and coaches under the bus, which... you know, there's the character of the man right there in something like that being the case. And I just have to say, and I used the term multiverse in another context a second ago, but it's almost enough to make me wish, Derek, that we lived in a multiverse, because it's looking like he's not going to play out the last 50 games in a Browns uniform one way or another. For everybody that embraced this decision, and this includes good friends of mine, and this includes fellow FDH Lounge dignitaries, I want them to have to live in a world where he plays the last 50 games and where they have to own this. I don't deserve it, but anybody that was in favor of this should have to deserve it. But one way or another, it looks like it may not play out that way. And the unraveling certainly took on another advanced stage in the opener against Dallas.
No, absolutely. I mean, it really is sad. And I genuinely feel for Cleveland fans. I actually recently went to Ohio for the first time, a few weeks ago.
Okay.
And, you know, I feel for the people of Ohio, obviously the ones that, you know, are Cleveland fans and, you know, don't go Cincinnati, because the Cleveland Browns are a great team, and they just made probably the worst mistake I think I've ever seen an organization make. And it gets even worse when you have to watch every weekend Baker Mayfield, who should have been your franchise quarterback, absolutely lighting it up in Tampa Bay. They actually look better this year than they did last year, and I wouldn't be surprised. I think they'll absolutely make another playoff run, and they could go even deeper in it than they did last year. But, I mean, I'm sure we'll get to them. But having to watch the quarterback you drafted go and do that every day again or every week against on another team in another conference, in arguably the better conference, is just sad. And, you know, Cleveland fans don't deserve what's happened to them with this insane Deshaun saga.
Yeah, well, some of us don't, some of us do. I'm in the don't deserve category. But I will tell you this, interestingly enough, I mean, you talk about Baker Mayfield getting away. I, as an original, along with FDH Lounge, fellow original dignitary Chris Galloway, we are day one Sam Darnold truthers. We believed he should have been the guy with the number one pick in 2018 after watching him at USC. So imagine the twinkle in my heart watching what he did with Minnesota in the first game. Yeah, I know it's just the Giants, but hey, maybe I was actually on to something back in the day there.
No, I don't disagree at all. And I was the idiot that actually bet on the Giants for that game. Okay. It ruined a beautiful parlay I had because I really thought Darnold was going to walk out and in a Minnesota team that really didn't improve that much. They obviously lost their quarterback. I really went in thinking, okay, this is going to be a stinker. But he played great. And yeah, we can do the, oh, it was just the Giants, but I watched a good chunk of that game, obviously, because I had money riding on it, and he was making good throws. He had a good touch. He was making good decisions. So as much as I, like many others, clowned at Darnold when he was on the Jets and thought he was an awful quarterback like everyone else, he looks pretty good. And I wonder if Zach Wilson will have his moment come too.
Yeah,
that's what I, because he's on, he's backing up, what is it?
Bo Nix,
49ers?
He's with Bo Nix,
oh,
I believe.
Yeah, he is in Denver, that's right.
It is funny about how they never end up bringing up the Denver Broncos on Megan Payton's show on FanDuel TV. They never want to put her on the spot to comment about that particular dumpster fire of a franchise, but I will say, in terms of Darnold, I thought he might have been irretrievable after, as I've always said, what the Jets did to him and what the Panthers did to him. Guys reach a point of no return, so I can't say that I wasn't surprised by what he did in that game. I was surprised, and I say good for him if he can keep it up, because, again, that's the guy that I saw low those years ago when he was coming out in the NFL draft. And to steer back to the AFC for a second here, a point of commonality, weirdly enough, between the Browns and the Bengals week one. But as I say that, I'm struck by what you said about being in Ohio for the first time a couple of weeks ago here. So knowing what I've heard previously from the corner of the state where Maya's family is at, you weren't anywhere near the part of the state, I think you might have been, where they might be eating cats and dogs. Were you, Derek?
Springfield? No, I saw no one eating cats or dogs.
Okay. All right. I figured I could pop you with that reference, but all right. Well, between
very topical, I like it. That's,
yes,
like,
thank
as
you.
Topical as you could get.
thank you. And you know, one might also say that Kevin Stefanski, perhaps at the moment, feels that maybe he has a concept of a plan of what he might do for the Jacksonville Week do. And I could do this all day long. But
did you write these? These are great.
Thank you. Yes, I'm always a fan of going uber topical on these things here. But what they have in common, and again, there's a lot of bitter Browns fans who are like, how come nobody's getting on Joe Burrow for his Week 1 performance? Because he doesn't suck like Watson does now, and he's been to a Super Bowl. So I think there's more than a few points of difference between them. But Zach Taylor,
and he's not a criminal.
He's not a criminal.
Just to add that in,
we could go on and on and on about the differences between them. And of course, Joe Burrow, always a soft spot in my heart, as I refer to him as the honorary Bobcat, with his dad having been the defensive coordinator down at Ohio University. An Athens boy, I will always root for that guy in situations that he's in. But the one thing that, again, Zach Taylor's been doing this the last couple of years, as somebody that was a Sean McVay protege, this whole thing of, like, bubble wrapping your team in August. I mean, I looked at the Browns, right? I mean, I was just aghast at the fact that the Browns were 2.5-point favorites, because you just expect that you're going to roll it all out there. Now, again, Jerry Jeudy actually got a touchdown, but he hadn't played at all in the preseason. Of course, Watson hadn't. Same thing with the Bengals. I knew the Bengals weren't going to cover. It was a surprise to me, as it was the rest of the world, that they actually lost the game outright. But this is a thing where, again, it looks like it might be in the old Yogi Berra parlance, getting late kind of early for them. Having Kansas City up next, the way that I looked at the season coming into the campaign here, I had Cincinnati coming out of the AFC again, as did fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway. We both had Cincinnati winning the Super Bowl. The reason being, I looked at the dynamic. You remember in 2021 and 2022 when it was Cincy, Buffalo, KC, and the team that only had to play one of those two teams advanced to the Super Bowl both times. The team that had to go through both teams would end up losing the AFC Championship. I feel like we're in a similar dynamic now, Cincy, Houston, and KC. But that's a thing where Cincinnati, again, in an AFC North division that I think is fading a little bit here, they could be really kind of struggling. I mean, if they end up 0-2, then it's a scenario where it's almost like the best case scenario, I think, is probably winning the division. And any thoughts of running down KC or potentially Houston for home field, that number one seed, and not having to play both of them in the playoffs, that could be slipping out of their grasp as early as mid-September.
Yeah, and I'm a little surprised you didn't mention Baltimore at all there, because, I mean, I really have, I think they're
going down a bit. I think they're headed down.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I thought with that the way they were kind of running their rushing offense, with kind of using Derrick Henry as just that, just bowling ball style he is, even at, you know, he's definitely in the back nine of his career, maybe the last hole, but he fits that offense well with the way Harbaugh runs it, and then supplementing in their secondary back, I forget his name off the top of my head, but that piece of it looked good. I thought they played much better against Kansas City than they have in the past. I think they got a little rattled with some of those illegal formation calls. I think it was sort of an odd game, but I think Baltimore, hands down, is the king of the AFC North right now. I really don't see, I mean, if Cincinnati comes up and stomps KC, which I don't see happening, but you never know, then maybe it'll change my opinion. But other than that, I really don't see that division as competitive as it was, you know, 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, or even last year when everybody finished with a winning record. You know, Baltimore, the thing to them with them is I just see that offensive line. It ain't what it was a couple of years ago, which for an aging Derrick Henry is probably not a good combination as you get later into the season. Linebacker losing Patrick Queen to Pittsburgh. The linebacker spot is a little bit thinner than it's been in the past. And again, Zay Flowers is the number one receiver. Like, are we sure that necessarily, like, a guy of his size is going to, because, again, prior to him, it was like, whoa, we just need Rashad Bateman to be a number one receiver. So, you know, Baltimore has not done a great job at developing weapons other than Mark Andrews through the air the last couple of years, and keeping him healthy and consistent is itself an issue. So that's kind of what colored how I looked at Baltimore. I did not actually even have them making the playoffs this year. I went out on a limb in a few cases. I didn't have Baltimore, and I didn't have my beloved Miami Dolphins making the playoffs either.
Yeah, Miami, I think they're definitely going to have a hangover. Baltimore, though, I do think you're absolutely right with the lack of a true number one wide receiver. But Lamar clearly is sort of back. I don't know whether Harbaugh's, like, they've changed the way they're calling plays, or if it truly was the weight loss that they mentioned 900 times during the broadcast. But Lamar does look like he was, and, you know, without that, at that first MVP season he has, where he was able to take huge runs. He was throwing the ball pretty well. But ultimately, I still think Baltimore is the king of that division. I do think more overall, though, because you brought up some points about the offensive line that I don't disagree with, but the interesting trend I noticed at the end of week one, which is different from the last few years, is it seems like the league is shifting back to a much more defense-centric league. I don't know if you noticed the same thing.
Little bit, yeah. And I saw a headline on one of the chat shows on TV where they're like, "Hulk Hogan, there was less passing week one." So that might be a symptom of one of the things that you're talking about there. That could be a sort of a subheading of that, is the fact that there was somewhat less passing. And so in talking about the North, I'm in agreement with you, because I think that it's moving into a sunset kind of a phase here. And a year ago, I was the big time hipster. I was wearing the figurative skinny jeans and everything. As far as the AFC South is on the rise, the AFC South is going to be, you know, coming at you before you even realize it. And I think I had Houston winning 8 games last year, which was outlandish at the time, but I still actually undershot what they ended up doing. And so I posed when we did the divisional previews this year. FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway, he agreed with me that the AFC now is certainly on the rise. And I said, "Do you think it has a chance in the next year or two to pass the AFC North?" And he kind of surprised me by saying it could be as early as this season. And I think watching week one, small sample size, but I think he might be right. Do you think that it might be sooner rather than later that we're talking about the AFC North, AFC South as being clearly superior to the AFC North?
I don't know if it's this year, but I do agree that it's trending that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Colts, Anthony Richardson looks like the next big star. I mean, he looked like that last year, obviously, before he got hurt. But, you know, I'd like to see him through the whole season. Let's see how he does. If they make it to the playoffs, I think the Colts are definitely trending upwards there. The Jags looked relatively flat in terms of any sort of improvements year to year. And honestly, I'd say the same thing about Houston. I know they had Diggs. The Diggs addition was huge in terms of their red zone efficiency. But I don't know. I think Houston didn't make the jump that I really thought they would. And I did have them as my very early futures pick to win the Super Bowl, just because it felt good last year, at the end of last year, and I thought they'd make a bigger jump. But, I mean, it's obviously just week one, but I didn't see the jump in them that I expected.
Well, I think what could end up playing out very well for you with that futures pick is, again, one of the key things that I look at. I mean, they've done the best 2-year job in the NFL of filling holes on the roster. Everybody looks at the obvious of C.J. Stroud and everything, but just where they were 2 years ago, as far as just all the craters that they had on that roster and the way they've methodically been filling those holes, that is really something that is going to put them, I think, in very good stead. I agree with what you're saying about Jacksonville, as much as it really kind of pains me, because I hate to dog on the Jaguars with Tony Khan being so instrumental in their operations and me being such a ginormous fan of what he's doing with All Elite Wrestling. But hey, Tony, you know, time to start, you know, getting that roster a little bit more toned up the way that Houston's is, because, you know, they could stand to learn a few things from what they're doing. It looks like Doug Peterson may have plateaued there. Potentially Trevor Lawrence as well. We'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, Jacksonville is very much a team that's on the spot this year, because they cannot afford another year standing still, or God forbid, in their case, regressing. But in looking at the AFC East, so it sounds like you might be a little bit kind of with me on this one here too. I believe that the sun has basically set on Buffalo's window, at least for now. You know, if they go through some retooling on the fly in another year or two, they might be a legitimate Super Bowl contender again. But I still pick them to win the division, because, again, very underwhelmed with what my Dolphins did in the offseason, particularly defensively. I understand they couldn't necessarily pony up for Wilkins to keep him there, but you talk about a team with holes, particularly defensively, still got some on the offensive line. I'm looking at this, and again, I've got them behind Buffalo, even though I don't really believe in Buffalo anymore as a Super Bowl contender, which I know that those two takes might not necessarily seem to be in alignment with what too many other people are thinking, but based on what you said about Miami, I would get the sense you kind of agree with me.
Yeah, I think that division is largely, I think it's going to be a bloodbath. I think it's kind of, it's going to be in a way similar to how the AFC North was, but rather than every team being really, really good, I think every team is sort of around the same in terms of, you know, how good they are. I think the Patriots are going to shock people, not because it's some great roster or anything like that. I just think it's a brand new coach. It's basically a brand new team. And I think teams are going to struggle in scheming against them. They've been used to how, you know, the Bill Belichick era. And I think they made a very quick pivot out of that. The Dolphins, yeah, I still think that running game is probably the best in the NFL with Mostert and A-Chain. I don't think you'll beat that. And you obviously still have Tyreek Hill and Waddle. I think Tyreek Hill's performance was a little metered with everything that went on before the game. But Miami still looks pretty decent. But overall, that division, I think it's largely up for grabs. I wouldn't be surprised if any one of those teams ended up winning. I know that's crazy to say when you look at New England and the struggles they've had, but I just think they're gonna throw people off. I think the Jets are another one that really the note I had about the Jets was I don't know if they're just okay or if San Francisco is just that good. It's probably more the latter, but New York might just be okay, and I think that's fine. I think each of those teams kind of showed some good things, showed some bad things, and I would struggle to pick the winner of that division.
Yeah, and I think also, too, the degree to which San Francisco really kind of, after they got started there, the way that they really turned it into gear without Christian McCaffrey, that's got to be a thing if you're a Jets fan. You got to be sitting there going, well, that wasn't supposed to happen because the Niners are clearly one of the best teams in the league, duh, but to get run over like that the way that they did in all facets of the game, and that's a thing where, too, it's interesting in light of what you said there, because that's a thing where a lot of people thought, and myself included, this has gotten to be a pretty good roster as far as filling out the different areas. The question mark is going to be Aaron Rodgers, in addition to being completely out of his mind at this point of his life, but what's he like physically at this point in time? That being a question mark. He didn't do anything to dispel the question marks on Monday night against San Francisco. So that's a thing where, yeah, I mean, if he can somehow get it back, and again, he's not lacking for weapons there. Garrett Wilson is a guy that can make anybody look good, for example. So that's what's really interesting with the Jets, that they laid an egg to the degree that they did, because I think if you're just going to say, well, it was all San Francisco, I would disagree with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do think a lot of it was San Francisco. I mean, when you have a team that can replace the best running back in the NFL, Hall of Fame player in Christian McCaffrey, with someone I hadn't heard of, and he plays arguably at the same level as McCaffrey, they're just at another level in terms of that the depth on that roster. You have the best tackle in the league. When healthy, you have the best running back in the league. You have a quarterback that does what he needs to do, doesn't make many mistakes. You have one of the best linebackers in the league. I mean, they have, when you look at what that roster, I mean, it's one of the reasons I refuse to ever really give Purdy his flowers, because I think if you put anyone on that, I think if you put Bryce Young on that team, that it would be the exact same. It's just, they're just that well run of an organization. Shanahan is arguably the best coach of all time, except he just can't win a Super Bowl. But other than that, he's one of the best coaches with the way he runs these teams. So I'm holding off on my dismissal of the Jets until I see a couple more games. I think Aaron Rodgers looked largely the way he has in the past. He didn't regress kind of like I maybe thought he would after the injury. He was making good passes to Lazard. He was making good passes to Wilson. I think he found a good rhythm with the two of them. So I'm going to give it another week or two before I make an informed decision on the Jets.
Well, in terms of that, you know, yeah, it's a situation where that roster, again, it has improved a lot on paper the last couple of years. It has come along as far as the way that they have, you know, filled in for, I mean, it's certainly not nearly on the degree to which Houston has filled their holes, but it is certainly significantly better than it was at that point in time. But in terms of San Francisco and the Jets, and it's coincidental that they played week one, and it's coincidental in that regard for what I'm about to say to you. I figure this will be something that will amuse you. So going back to, again, the divisional previews that dignitary Chris Galloway and I were doing, we were talking about that. We spent a lot of time, when we were talking San Francisco, we mostly talked about Brock Purdy, because it's like, that's going to determine this. Like, can they ever win a Super Bowl with a system quarterback? Based on the quarterbacks that he would be facing in the Super Bowl in the future coming out of the AFC, any of the top three or four teams, it would seem unlikely. We're talking about that. Chris says there's no way San Francisco is going to give him the $400 million deal or whatever it would be. And he said, you know what? It would be the most Jets thing ever. They give him the $400 million deal. I mean, you can just see that, right? You could just see that playing out, that he's the next Jets quarterback on a monster contract.
Or send him to Cleveland.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're going to have to avoid Deshaun Watson's deal. And I've been telling people around here the last couple days, they've been like, oh, hey, maybe they'll be able to get out of it. I'm like, dude, there's a long, long, long court battle and this and that and all these other things before it can get to that point. So, yeah, that thing's not getting voided anytime soon. But I will say with San Francisco, there is perhaps also a little bit of a commonality with the team that they had the great 1990s rivalry with, Dallas. And that being San Francisco the last couple of years. And I just, when I did the predictions for this year, I just kind of factored it in that, like, I'm never as impressed with their roster as it ends up being, because particularly this year, I had questions about their depth on the defensive line, maybe a little bit on the offensive line. So really the trenches on both sides of the ball. And again, they look like they're pretty strong in both areas there. And in looking at it, I got to tell you, I made some, you know, maybe controversial predictions this year. Miami to miss the playoffs, Baltimore to make the playoffs. Hilariously, the Browns, who I'm not even invested in at this point, I actually thought the Browns were going to be a wild card and get turfed in the first round like last year. But so I went out on a limb in a few places, maybe no bigger limb than saying Dallas 8-9. I really thought this was going to be the year, and not in the playoffs. I'm looking at this team, and I'm looking at holes at center, defensive back, defensive tackle, outside linebacker, wide receiver, and yes, I would include running back in that as well. Although Brandon Cook's wide receiver, I mean, he was able to toast the Browns secondary, but I don't know what that proved exactly. But again, I'm looking at this, and again, I've been following the coverage of them. Former co-worker of mine, friend of the show, Dan McDowell, formerly of The Ticket in Dallas, now the great sports and comedy podcast, The Dumb Zone. They spend a fair amount of time talking Cowboys since they're Dallas-based. And I was starting to think maybe I was wrong about that defense from listening to them there. I had questions about that defense at all three levels as far as holes. But the way that they've come out, the way that they've played, and you know, what those guys were saying about how it was looking in training camp, I was already starting to think maybe this is going to be like San Francisco, where I look at the roster and it ends up performing at a level more than what I'm seeing with the naked eye. And again, I don't know what week one against that Browns team necessarily proves, and a Browns team that, again, was basically bubble wrapped for all of August. But it is looking like they're going to be neck and neck right there with Philadelphia all year long, who, by the way, themselves bounced back in the Southern Hemisphere week one.
I mean, I honestly think Dallas has the exact same year they had last year. I think they win the division pretty soundly. I think they go to the playoffs. They maybe, depending on who they face, they maybe win the divisional, and then, you know, then they lose the next game. I don't see much that's changed there. I mean, the running back is Zeke. you never know. I mean, Pollard was awful last year. So, I mean, going from him back to Zeke, I don't know, maybe that there's a groove back there. They gave Dak his mega contract. Maybe that makes him perform better. I doubt it. I think he just plays the exact same. CD's still probably one of the best. He's a top five best running back, or running back. He's the top five best receiver in the league. But the interesting X factor with Dallas is, in oddly enough, is that kicker. Being able to kick from 60 plus yards is a pretty big game changer. And I think Mike McCarthy's an awful coach. I think that's been one of their biggest, I think that's been one of the biggest things holding them back over the past, these past four-ish seasons with him. Mm-hmm. He's not horrible in the sense that he's not someone that's horrible, but he just offers nothing. He offers nothing to that team. And I think with the way that team is shaped, you just need a different coach. But overall, I think Dallas does the exact same thing they did last year.
Well, Aubrey's the best kicker in the league right now, hands down. And I got to tell you, and this will be something that will amuse you. I'm a sucker for any type of scamming off of personal connection stories. So the aforementioned guys on the Dumb Zone podcast, once they broke away from the ticket in Dallas and went to Patreon and ad-supported stuff here, one of the things that they've done for extra income for the show is charging any fans of the show $690, basically, because in great childish fashion, they're a big fan of the first two numbers there, but for a sit-in. And they'll either go to your place or you can come sit in there. They get an email from one of their fans that says, "I'd like to be able to waive the $690 fee for a sit-in if I bring my son-in-law. He's Brandon Aubrey." So they were like, "Yes, bring Brandon Aubrey and we'll waive your $690. So that is just an awesome story. Like, if you're ever going to scam anything there, you might as well scam a $690 fee waivage. But, yeah, he's the best kicker in the league. He's a heck of a story. They were interviewing him on there about basically kind of coming from nowhere. And it's an amazing story, and he is a great talent, and he's somebody that can be a difference maker in close games. And we talked about this a bit before, and looking at the North Division here, a little bit of surprises week one in terms of the two teams furthest up on the plains in this division here, Green Bay and Minnesota. Again, nobody expected to be in a situation where quarterback would be a question mark for the Packers, although, as I was saying to a friend of mine, couple of days ago, as a dated reference, I suppose, but the days of just being able to put in a Mark Brunell from the bench are long since past. So Jordan Love being down, that scrambles their situation. Sam Darnold outperforming what a lot of people thought that they would do, again, albeit against the Giants. A tough week one for Caleb Williams, but they end up winning anyways. So this is a division that, again, and my guy, me as a day one truther of Jared Goff, and me always believing in Jared Goff. That's a guy where, again, in 2016, I was saying with the Browns, turn your head and cough for Goff. That's all they had to do. Stay at number one, take Goff. Of course, them blowing it repeatedly is part of the lineage of this franchise. But the quarterbacks in this division, both where they stand presently, with Love being a question mark health-wise over the first half of the season and then moving forward, this really is one of the most interesting divisions in football, sort of out of nowhere when it comes to the quarterbacks, because I don't think we would have considered Green Bay to be that interesting prior to this. It would have been, hey, they got a great young quarterback who's developing. That's, a fairly, not common thing in the league, but a lot of teams have that, a decent number of them. And then Minnesota, nobody expected much. But all of a sudden, the quarterbacks are fascinating, and in terms of how long it's going to take Caleb Williams to get it going.
Yeah, I mean, I'll even go one better. I think the NFC North is the best division in football.
Ooh.
I mean, the Lions are obviously the same. They're just as good as they were last year. And I think the biggest improvement they made is coaching. I think Dan Campbell changed some of his lay my balls out on the table strategy he did with some of those fourth down calls. Because you saw it in that game against the Rams. They kicked, and I think it was the third or fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal when a year prior he would have gone for it, and that maybe changed the outcome of the game. So if he can kind of keep doing that, I think that's that might be the improvement they needed. Because I think as much as I love Dan Campbell and I'm a fan of his, as fan of some of those, you know, as Bruce Arians would say, you know, no risk it, no biscuit decisions, I think it cost them in a few games last year. So if he's kind of tuned that back a little bit, that could be a big factor for them. The rest of the division, obviously the Vikings are a huge shock with Darnold there. I mean, if he is able to keep pace with that, who knows? I mean, it's still a pretty great team. So, I mean, maybe he leads them where they want to go. And then obviously they got JJ McCarthy sitting back in the wings. Maybe give him more time to develop. I think it's a plus for them. Green Bay, yeah, losing Jordan Love definitely hurts, and definitely hurts, you know, them being the best division. But from what it seems, it's going to be a few weeks. If they can maybe go 500 during that, it's not the end of the world. But it definitely hurts them in terms of being able to have a shot at winning the division, which they really didn't have much anyway with Detroit there. But making the wild card too, with how really just stacked the rest of the NFC is.
Yeah.
The Bears are interesting because this Bears team reminds me, and I'm curious if you're going to speak the same thing, reminds me of exactly the Bears team from 2018. That team that made the playoffs, that had the phenomenal defense, that Mitch Trubisky kind of just was able to just barely carry through, and then obviously the double doink killed them for the next however many years. Caleb Williams has potential. Yeah, he didn't look great, but, you know, I think he has the most potential of any of these last bits of quarterbacks they have. I really was never that much of a Justin Fields guy. I thought he had potential, but I don't know. I'm never overly high on Ohio State quarterbacks in this modern era. I think that team is just another one of the system ones. It's kind of like Alabama in that regard, with a couple exceptions of obviously that last couple groups they had. But I think the Bears are going to do largely the same kind of trajectory they had in 2018. I don't know. I doubt they'll win the division, but if the defense can carry them, it's not impossible that they make a wild card.
That's a very interesting comparison you make, and it's not one that I would have thought to make as far as they go. I will say that, you know, in looking at this, I actually thought more of Justin Fields coming out than I did of C.J. Stroud, because C.J. Stroud, Georgia game aside, was an unimpressive big game quarterback at Ohio State. And again, I think it's an indictment on what the play calling was at Ohio State that he looks so much better now. Fields, I guess you could say I'm sort of in that whole kind of thing of being a Jared Goff truther. I'm still a Justin Fields truther, and I don't know that he's going to be a star, but I certainly think he's miles better than anything that Pittsburgh has had probably in the better part of a decade. So as a Steeler hater, I'm so happy that they were dumb enough not to pick up the fifth-year option on him. So maybe he has a good year and walks. It would be nice to see them have to taste something like that for a change. Chicago, like I said, I wouldn't have thought to make that comparison because they seemed like a team to me that was going to be having to win in shootout-type games here. They did a lot to juice up the offense, but I still had some questions about them defensively. And when we were doing the divisional previews with Chris Galloway, I said to him at the time, you know, that if you were a Bears fan in 1950 when Sid Luckman retired, one of the all-time greats, and you're thinking, oh, well, you know, how long can it be till we get another, you know, great quarterback here? And you look at what they've had over the decades, and you flash forward to 2024 when Caleb Williams projects to be the best you've had since 1950. I mean, if you're a Bears fan at that point in time, and you've lived through all of this, and you draft Caleb Williams, you got to be feeling about as good as if you had Nicole Shanahan as your sugar mama, Derek. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Bears get to come into the season, and now I think they came into it with hope, and I think now that hope is at least on the same level of trajectory. It didn't collapse. It didn't go crazy high. I mean, maybe it did for some of them, but you know, Caleb Williams didn't have the best day, but I still see a lot of potential there. And again, I think the defense shocked people. And I think it'd be another one of those 2018 seasons if it works out. I don't know if Caleb Williams wins in those shootouts. I think it's going to rely on the defense. So curious to see how they kind of do. Curious in the interdivision play, and then just, you know, bone through the rest of it.
Well, with the receiving core that he's got, I have to say, there's really not much of an excuse there, although there is a school of thought that Keenan Allen might finally be washed. We'll have to see what happens when he's healthy, and that, of course, has always been an issue with him. I'm a huge mark for Rome Odunze. I felt that he was probably a narrow second in the wide receiving class there. And he couldn't go wrong with any of the big three, with Neighbors included. Your boy now, Marvin Harrison Jr., probably the best overall talent in the draft. But I really didn't feel Odunze was too far behind him based on what I had seen at Washington. I don't have much to say about the South except that it still basically sucks on balance, and that my pick of New Orleans to win the division, and I'm not normally high on New Orleans, but I picked them this year on a whim. Maybe that wasn't looking so bad after week one, although Carolina's still crap. But you said the North is potentially the best division in the NFC. I don't know if I'm ready to proclaim the West as that, but that is obviously, I think, that division's a big impediment, I think, to your Arizona team, which I think is, you know, coming back nicely through the rebuild. I didn't have you with too many needs coming into the season, a little bit on the trenches on both sides of the ball, maybe a little bit at linebacker as well. But in that division, there's the Goliath in San Francisco. You've got the Rams, who even with a close loss week one, I think they showed they're not going anywhere. They've basically been able to retool on the fly. Probably not a Super Bowl contender, but good enough to make it in a thin NFC as far as that goes. And I was one of these guys that signed on and said, you know, with everything we'd heard about Mike McDonald as a football brain, he might be enough to be able to lift Seattle to the playoffs, even as that roster is in transition. And after a slow start against Denver, we did see that eventually there. So I actually had the NFC West as having three playoff teams, which is, I know, probably more than most people would have said, Derek.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think the NFC West is largely flat, other than obviously San Francisco. I think there's maybe some bias here, but I wasn't overly impressed with Seattle or LA. I think they were, and I think the Cardinals have, I think they, you know, I'm trying to not be too biased, but, you know, they looked a million times better than they have last year or the year before. Obviously, you know, we have Kyler from the start. I think some people are being crazy about Marvin Harrison not getting any touches. It was like 40-mile-per-hour winds in Buffalo. Like, let's relax. The game plan was clearly run the ball down Buffalo's throats, and it was largely working. They kind of just fell apart against Buffalo. They made some bad decisions. Our defense is a train wreck. There were some bright spots. I think there's some potential for that defense to get better, but the offense is largely stepped up, and this is without Zay Jones, who may be a perfect fit in that offense when he comes back. You know, I think the NFC West is largely not up for grabs, obviously. I don't think anyone's going to beat San Francisco, but if someone gets that number two spot, maybe they can get enough wins and sneak into the wild card. But I think it's now, besides San Francisco, I think the Cardinals aren't just the little brother that everyone's going to kick around anymore. I think they're approaching par with Seattle and L.A. And L.A. obviously had some losses with Puka going down. Seattle, I don't think Geno's it. I think that Denver is a train wreck and they just figured it out. But let's put them against an actual competent team and competently coached team and see how they do. But yeah, no, I still hold to it. I think the North is still the best division in the NFC.
I mean, it's going to be a strong contender to be that anyways, yeah. And particularly, again, if Green Bay can even just kind of tread water over the course of the next couple of weeks, although that might be asking for a lot with Malik Willis being first up to come in there. It is interesting what you said with Arizona there, because I got to tell you, I had a little bit of a raised eyebrow when I saw that they were a slight home favorite against the Rams week two. Maybe because it's, again, I have the Rams at about 10 wins and making the playoffs. But I'm looking at this like, is this the thing of the odds makers, like, grossly overestimating home field again? You know, because they did that a number of times week one. Certainly the Browns were one of the instances of that where I looked at it like, how the hell are the Browns favored here? I got to tell you, I got a little bit of the same feeling looking at that line there with the Cardinals and the Rams, but I guess that probably surprises you a little less.
No, I mean, taking my Cardinals hat off, if the Rams or the dogs, I would say take them. It was the same thing I thought when I saw the line for the Dallas-Cleveland game. I wish I put my entire life savings on Dallas when I saw they were the dogs. I had them on my parlay, but ultimately I wasn't able to pull that off. But, I mean, the odds maker is in a weird position. But, no, I mean, the Cardinals traditionally have a very poor home field advantage. I mean, we get our it's basically a neutral site with the way other people come, but there is more hope this year, so you never know. I'm excited in that regard, but I mean, that division, everyone largely kind of plays each other pretty well, so us being the favorites isn't crazy, but I don't know. I'm curious how this team will play against LA. I think I want to see them play a little more airmail. They were obviously focusing very much on the ground game in Buffalo, which worked for almost the whole entire first half, so it would definitely not shock me. It's not a foregone conclusion like it's been in the past that they would win or lose against the Rams. So I wouldn't be shocked, and I'd be obviously very happy if they beat LA. But you know, if I take my Cardinals hat off and if you get a line that's as Rams as the dogs, I would say take it. But before we jump off the West, I know we kind of just grazed through the South. And yeah. I do have a couple of thoughts.
Okay.
So obviously Tampa is my sleeper. I kind of almost want to put a future on them. I don't know if they'd be able to beat some of the juggernauts, but they look just as good and they might even look better than they looked last year. So they obviously are going to win that division outright. The Saints I need to see another week of them. Because obviously Carolina just needs to be launched into the sun with how bad that organization is on every level between players, management, coaching, the owner's off. It's a train wreck. We just get rid of them. Send them to another city. I don't know. So I don't know if I can judge. Obviously, I can't judge the Saints on their performance. But I mean, putting up 47 points in the NFL is no easy feat, regardless of who you're playing. Right. So the Saints might be very good. I wouldn't be surprised if they have a breakout year. The Falcons, though, are interesting. I don't think if the line keeps playing like they did that game, Kirk Cousins won't last three more games. So they have a lot of work to do. I was actually kind of up on them. I thought Kirk might have been what they needed to make that step. But if he's getting launched into the ground every other play, then he's just not going to last.
Yeah, I was more dubious of Atlanta. I'm not really impressed with some of the roster building things they've done in recent years here. I still think they have a long, long ways to go defensively. And that's a situation there. Carolina, too, it's very interesting that San Francisco evades a lot of the kind of scrutiny I'm about to mention because of Brock Purdy. But in the early 2020s, this is the golden era of worst trade of all time possibilities, candidates here, between what San Francisco laid out to get Trey Lance, which, I'm sorry, that's still a horrific deal for them, even if Purdy stepped up, because look at all the draft capital they cost themselves there. Look at the ways that, again, and with narrow Super Bowl losses to Kansas City nonetheless here. So, you think anybody they traded away could have made possibly an extra impact last February? You'd have to think so. Carolina, enough said. But the Carolina one, while it's probably worse than San Francisco, still infinitely better than what the Browns did for Watson because, again, Carolina, if they suck, they're just going to, do what they did next year. It'll be like when they got Cam Newton, when they already had Jimmy Clausen, where they put, draft capital into him. It hurts to have to do that, but so what? If you're the Browns, you can't get out from underneath the Watson deal because of the financial thing here. You're left praying for a court conviction, as so many people are on the North Coast these days, to weasel out from that contract. But for all three of these things to have happened in recent years is really, really kind of jarring. I mean, it is a thing where, again, teams will sell out for who they think can be the quarterback to get them over the top. But we went a long, long, long time in the league without seeing even one deal as bad as these three, and they all happened more or less on top of each other.
I don't know. I mean, very harsh to throw San Francisco in that mix, because, I mean, yeah, the Trey Lance thing was nuts, but it clearly hasn't affected them.
And three, you know, number what? Ones,
they
though.
They
three clearly, number ones.
I know. It wasn't the best deal, but you know what? They didn't need three more number ones when you already have the best tackle, the best running back, the best linebacker. They didn't need any more number ones. So I'm not, you know, you won't see me crying that, you know, San Francisco made a poor deal. And like, and, you know, they've been to the Super Bowl. They've had some, they've had great seasons. So, I mean, they kind of did the LA thing. You know, they gave, LA gave up all of their picks for Stafford and others, and they won a Super Bowl, and they're competitive every year since. So there's some merit sometimes to the give away all your draft picks so you can win now, but there's got to be a careful calculation in what are we getting to win now.
Yeah, and that's, again, San Francisco, like I said, they've largely skated, they've largely evaded sort of being in that same conversation, even though what they gave up was objectively pretty shite for a guy that they just ended up cutting and just ended up getting nothing out of, and getting a guy where in the end, the looming question remains, is he going to be worth the kind of money that he is going to command based on what his stats and his win-loss record is going to show? When he is not, in fact, a quarterback who is ever likely to be the better of the two quarterbacks in a Super Bowl when you look at the AFC top contenders there. So that remains, of course, to be
answered. He may not ask for a max deal, though. Obviously, this is more. This is just kind of random opinion, but I could see him taking a light deal so he could hang out and keep them doing what they're doing.
Honestly, that would be the smart thing, is basically to do the Tom Brady thing of F the player union. I'm going to do what I want to do. And again, it's all monopoly money to these guys anyways at some point. So, you know, yeah, it's not like anybody's going to cry for him if it ends up being $20 million as opposed to whatever it is he thinks he can command on the free market. And again, as much as it was funny to laugh about the Jets previously here too, the question is whether or not somebody's going to actually look at him as being that missing piece of the puzzle. I mentioned the Jets just because, again, they've had a history of doing that and being bedazzled by what they consider to be a name guy, and it is kind of amusing to think that somebody who was drafted as Mr. Irrelevant has, in even a relative sense, graduated to becoming a name guy. But, you know, when you've been to a Super Bowl and come that close to winning it, I guess that is what would be the case. Just to kind of bring it full circle here, just in looking at this, Derek, I mean, there's not much that happened week one that really changes any of my sort of perceptions, although, and I say that as somebody that was like getting a feeling before week one that my sort of default pick of the Browns to make a wild card again, that was not looking so great. So it just sort of reinforced the gut instinct that I was having watching this team in August. Again, maybe the closest I could come on any of this kind of stuff is Cincinnati. If they basically don't start waking up here and playing to their level of capability, they're a team I picked to win the Super Bowl. So if I was to be starting to waver on any of my thoughts there, it might perhaps be them, because they've run out of time already to be able to get their act together. Anything that really kind of changed your opinion one way or another based on what you saw week one?
Other than what we talked about, I mean, not particularly. When you look at week two, the schedule makers just cooked with that, because when you look at week two, it looks like most of our questions are going to be answered with some of these matchups. I mean, it's the who's actually good game with, you know, Chicago and New Orleans, obviously KC and Cincinnati. I mean, and we can hopefully learn more, is Cincinnati actually terrible or was it just a rough game? But I mean, the biggest things, and if I'm, you know, bouncing my thoughts after week one off of your FDH Lounge power rankings, I mean, the biggest things I would kind of do is I think Philadelphia drops tier two. I think Buffalo drops a tier two. I think Miami drops a tier two. And I move Baltimore and Tampa Bay into that top tier. Tampa obviously being the bottom of that top tier. But I have a lot of faith in Baker, and I think Baltimore, I think they looked pretty, they had a good showing against Kansas City, better than I thought they would. I think they traditionally play pretty poor against Kansas City in the regular season. And, you know, but they looked better than I thought they were coming into that game. I kind of thought Kansas City would would stomp them a little harder. So,
okay.
But I mean, other than that, it's largely you got the juggernauts in Kansas City, San Francisco, and again, I throw Baltimore in that range. Detroit is basically a juggernaut at this point. Houston looks as good as they did last year. I think Philadelphia is done. Dallas looks the same. And I think they win that division easily. And then Buffalo's going to have a hard time, I think. Harder time than they have in the past winning that division.
Well, Tampa Bay being on the top tier, that's a real clip and save right there as far as a prediction goes. But, you know, again,
I'm a Baker guy. Always have.
Okay. Well, were you still a Baker guy in 2021 when he was the idiot who just refused to go to the bench and kept a team that would, if they'd had Case Keenum in there, would have been in the playoffs, but the team missed the playoffs because of him? Now, Kevin's
that's Stefanski. Coaching.
Well, yeah. Stefanski, Haslam, whatever. They didn't have the balls to tell him to go get on the bench. Yeah, they don't escape culpability as well. But, yeah, well, that's a real clip and save there because, yeah, like I said, I had New Orleans coming out of the division, even though I wasn't necessarily super impressed with them. But it was just on the, well, you got to pick somebody to win the division kind of a thing. And the whole notion that every year there's going to be some teams that don't repeat from the previous year. So to me, Tampa Bay was some of the lower hanging fruit as far as, well, who won it last year that might not win it again this year. But that's the joy of this. We get to see this all play out. And I look forward to catching up with you sometime during the season here, Derek, and we'll see where our thoughts and our predictions are at that point in time. But glad to be able to keep the week one tradition going with you as always here. This is always a great show, getting an early season look at things. So thanks so much for being a part of this, Derek.
Hey, thank you. Can't wait to come back.
Excellent. Looking forward to it myself. Thank you very much, Derek Allen, and thank you. Appreciate everybody checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1759.